match their physicality wise, and you know they're going with it to every ball there.
Outstanding game, 2 points from Lee
so far. Good day at the office there. You know, she popped up with a very much needed point, which Kenny really needs it.
This is Come On Kind with Martin Quilty and Anya Fahey.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome once again into the studios here in Kilkenny and KCLR for Come On Kind Season 6, Episode 11 this evening. And it was a busy weekend for all of the administrators, county board officials, provincial officials, Camogie staff, and anybody that was in Kildare that had anything to do with Congress, because yes, we were there, and we'll discuss that a little bit later on. We even have a couple of special guests coming on to have a chat with us. But my own very special guest, as always, who's here with us almost every week, is in studio. And that is, of course, Anya Farrell. How are you, Anya?
I'm good, thanks, Martin. How are you?
Well, sure, we're tired. That's how we are now. It's been a long weekend. We're tired, but mm-hmm. we're
yeah, sure.
here.
It's about time you pull your finger out and do something.
We're ploughing on. Anyway, on that note, it was a busy weekend because Congress 2024 was on in what was historic in a certain way, because one, the association is 120 years old this year. If you knew that, some people might not, but yes, it was incepted in 1904 and we are now in 2024, 120 years. The GAA is 140 years old this year, 1884. Hard to believe it. The issue with the SCORT is still around. Anya's going to give me her opinions. We'll have our special guest giving their opinions. I won't say him or her yet because we'll keep you in a little bit of suspense, give you the new rules that came up, some of the ones that maybe didn't pass. Obviously, there's a couple of trial rules did pass and they are in. Plus, we have the league finals, we have the minor. It's all going to happen in the presence of ourselves here, and we're actually going to kick it off, I think, Anya, with the minors.
Yeah.
Because the minors was out the weekend. It was Kilkenny versus Galway in what was supposed to be MW Higher Training Centre, but with the weather that was in it, it got changed from Billy to Jack to every kind of a place. But anyway, we got there eventually and it was played in Parknaraha in Glenmore, and it was a 3-point victory for Kilkenny over Galway. Galway failing to score in the whole of the second half, 114 to 111, a good result.
Yeah, outstanding result there for Kilkenny, I suppose. If you were kind of looking at the results in the first half, first of all, you would say, God, there must be a gale force win there. I think, was it 111 to 4 points at half time or something like that? And then Kilkenny obviously coming out in the second half with the wind behind their back. But obviously, listen, the defence put up a serious battle there as well to, you know, get a really good victory over Galway. And, you know, it puts them nice and pretty there in the table. They've more or less cemented a qualification spot, and I suppose that's what David and the lads would be certainly looking for, is to just get into that top four position, that top four area, to get into an All-Ireland semi-final. So yeah, some really, really good work there, and you can see by each game that has gone on the intent that Kilkenny have shown. And I suppose they've got a big one now coming up against Cork. Is it next? Cork is up next, who are top of the table, so that'll be another mouth-watering affair.
It certainly will. I suppose where we were looking at a couple of weeks ago when Kilkenny was down near the bottom of that table and we were wondering, you know, God, can we get out of this? We need to get into the top four. A couple of good results for them is after putting them now up into joint second, only a couple of points behind Tipperary, who was also on the same points, and just 1 point ahead of Cork. Remember, it's the top four that qualify, and currently in that situation is Cork, Tipperary, Kilkenny and Waterford after results at the weekend, because those results were Waterford 3-9, Antrim 8 points, Tipperary 3-4, Cork 2-10, which in my maths is 16 points to 13 in favour of Cork, so they won by 3 points as well, which blows the whole lot wide open.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a possibility now where we were looking that we might not qualify for a semi-final depending on how our results went. Galway are now in that situation because they have one game left, and that is against Antrim, and it's away. It's anybody's game at the minute, but would we have thought Galway was going to be second from bottom?
Certainly not. I suppose when you kind of looked at it from the very beginning of the campaign, you know, Galway got a really good victory in the first round, 115-10 point victory over Waterford in that. And I suppose they were kind of, you know, starting off that campaign as they meant to go on. Now, obviously, they did come up after that and they had a loss to Tipperary. But, you know, I suppose anybody kind of looking at it would be saying, you'd be expecting or fancying Galway to certainly qualify in the top four of that. But it just goes to show how the tables can turn so dramatically week on, week off. Because, you know, these minor games, they're so fast. They're coming thick and fast and heavy. And I suppose it'll be all down to the panel that you have there. And, you know, Kilkenny certainly have done their work. It's probably going to be if the table were to stay the way it is at the moment, it's probably the first time in a long time you mightn't see Galway, you know, getting through for an All-Ireland semi-final spot at minor level.
Yeah, it certainly is going to be a long time. But as we say, there's results and there's pairings in the way. Number one, we do know that Kilkenny is definitely qualified for a semi-final.
Yeah.
We do know that. So whatever happens with the Cork game, now there might be a little bit of shadow boxing in this one, because do you really want to show your hand when you're coming up against it? Because we're assuming that it's going to be 1-4, 2-3. That isn't confirmed yet, but there's a possibility that Kilkenny, if they did beat Cork, could be playing either Galway or Waterford again in that semi-final, depending on how it is. Waterford is playing Tipperary. They'll definitely be wanting to get a result against Tipperary. And if they get the result against Tipperary, whether Galway beat Antrim or not, it makes no difference, because Waterford will qualify.
Yeah, that point from that draw that they got really is kind of like the saving grace there for Waterford at the moment, and it kind of just literally edges them ahead just a little bit against Galway. You know, it's going to be, again, it's coming down to the last weekend of the round robin, which is what you want to see. You don't want to see like a dead duck, as in having, you know, the first two or three rounds of the campaign and it kind of wrapped up as to who's going forward. You know, it's really good to see it coming down to the wire in this one. So yeah, huge games this weekend for Galway and Waterford. You know, Cork, Tipperary, Kilkenny have qualified, but two big massive games for Waterford and Galway this weekend, and be very interested to see how they go.
Well, it certainly will. It's after opening up the whole thing, and we're anticipating a very hectic weekend of minor camogie action in Division 1. Now, someone might be able to answer the question for me in relation to how that draw might be going is our very special guest, and hopefully he is going to join me right now on the phone line. And it is, of course, the new Uachtaráin of Uncommon Camogieacht, and that is Mr. Brian Malloy. And hopefully, if I push this button, Brian is going to be there. Brian, how are you?
I am. I'm here. I'm good. Thanks very much. All good.
Perfect.
Getting my head around my new role, but all good so far.
Well, I'm going to throw you straight in at the deep end now to see, because myself and Anya are here, we're just discussing the Minor A All-Ireland Championship for the semi-final. Do you know off the top of your head, is it going to be an open draw for that semi-final, or is it going to be graded as in 1v4 or 2v3?
I don't know, and it's very unfair of you to throw that on me on air, so I'm going to have to come across like I have no notion. I've been running around the place all day. I don't know. I will try and find out for you.
No, that's okay, Brian. It's a stickler to put you in that position anyway in the first place, but no, that's no hassle at all. Anyway, first off, congratulations on the appointment at the weekend. Historic in a couple of ways, as we were saying earlier, 120 years old for the Camogie Association. Obviously, you're the first male to be elected into the role of president in those 120 years. But it's also the first time that we've had a Connacht president as well. So celebrations all around. And it's now, we're Tuesday evening. How has the weekend been for yourself? Obviously, a bit hectic.
Yeah, it has. It's been hectic. It's been brilliant, obviously. Brilliant. It's been kind of non-stop. You're kind of building up to it with the Uachtaráin Tofa model. You're building up to it for a year, so it seems miles away. And then all of a sudden, it's that day, and all of a sudden, it's now, and you're up talking, and you were there yourself. I'm a fairly accomplished speaker, and even with that, I was still getting nervous, and I kind of made the comment, because I almost greeted the delegates with Uachtaráin, which would be what I've been used to saying when I'm starting off a speech, and then I realised, well, no, actually, I'm Uachtaráin, so I don't say Uachtaráin anymore when I start speaking. But yeah, it was a momentous day for me and for my family. I've gone on the record before saying that, you know, some people kind of set out with an objective that they're going to, you know, get to the top of an organisation. And I'm a very ambitious person in life in so many ways, but I never got involved in Camogie to become the president of the Camogie Association. There was never a Brian Molloy for president campaign at any point in time. Right up to literally the last couple of months before I put myself forward for the position and became TOFA. It was described to me. I kind of fell into it to an extent. My children are girls, and we had moved down to Ballinderreen in 2006 in South Galway, and our house literally adjoined the pitch. So we put a little stairs in and a few little wooden steps into the wall so the kids could climb up and over without having to go around the road onto the pitch. And I went down to a club AGM and was appointed vice chair of the club. It was the first position I was given, so straight in as vice chair. And the chair, a very famous hurling man from Galway, so Noel Lane, so multiple All-Ireland winner, multiple All-Star winner, was the chairperson of the club at the time. And I worked with him for a number of years, learned a lot from him, and then took over as chair and as you know, went through quite a number of different roles over the years before I've ended up where I am now.
Well, none of us actually intended to get involved, I don't think, with Camogie, because a bit like you with the daughters, I was the very same with the sister and was always heavily involved in GAA until she got involved in playing Camogie. And sure, like everything else, it's like a domino effect. As soon as you get started, you're asked to help out an umpire and then referee challenge matches, and then they just draw you and suck you in a little bit. And when you're there, then you can't get out of it. But it certainly is great fun to be there. You have mentioned that you are an ambitious person. I suppose it's a 3-year term, so what would your plans be, we'll say, for the next couple of years? We know that the strategic plan up to 26 is out, but for Brian Molloy himself, what would he like to see achieved in his presidency?
Yeah, so integration is going to be a big part of it. That timeline to 2027 has already been set as a recommendation. Obviously, the steering group for integration is a recommending body rather than a decision-making body as such. The decisions are made by Congress and the three associations, and that's how everything will be done. It'll be done by our delegates in Congress each time we're making any significant changes, as always has been the case. But integration, I'd like to see it move forward and move forward quickly. The Camogie Association has made no secret of the fact that we would be of the view that it can be done and should be done as fast as possible. The fact that we have made the recommendation, and we're from an Ord Cóirle perspective at least happy with the recommendation to go with the recommendation that we use the existing structures of the GAA as the structure for the new association, and that solves a lot of operational problems and structural problems and legal problems that would otherwise exist if you tried to set up a brand new association and transfer the three organisations across. So that should enable us to move things forward more quickly. The one club model, you know, we have a one club model. Yes, it needs to be updated. Yes, it needs work. But the bones of a model whereby a club can have up to all four codes playing within it, within the structures, already exists. So we're not reinventing the wheel in many ways. Now, there's loads of things that need to happen, but I'd like to see things moving forward. And as I said in Congress, I'd like to see the three associations, including our own. And, you know, it's important that people don't think I'm pointing out the finger to other people. I point the finger at our own association as well, but that we'd all adopt an integrated mindset. So look at decision-making through the prism of, well, would we do this if we were an integrated association? If we were all operating within one association, is this really the decision we'd make? Yeah. I'm getting a bit of feedback there, and I'm not missing anything. The reality is that sometimes we make decisions that, you know, I'm not sure we would make in an integrated environment. And I've highlighted the practice of GAA clubs charging their Camogie colleagues for access to pitches, but not charging the GAA football or hurling teams for access to the same pitch. And the reality is those pitches were developed, bought, maintained using fundraising from the community. And women and girls did as much work to do that fundraising and make that fundraising happen. And they rattled as many buckets, and they sold as many raffle tickets, and they ran as many fundraisers as anybody else. And I think we need to get to a model. If we were integrated, would it be happening? No. So we need to start looking at some of those decisions that we make on a day-to-day basis now and start thinking, well, what would we do? I think the support that needs to be hugely improved between ourselves and the GAA is often talked about, but ourselves and the LGFA. We operate and we're really strong in Camogie in South Galway, where I lived for 17 years. I'm living in Kildare now, by the way. My wife has moved up to Kildare. But South Galway would be a big stronghold of Camogie, and there wouldn't be much LGFA there at all. And there's other areas where it's all football, it's all ladies football, and there's no Camogie. Now, realistically speaking, we should be trying to get girls who play ladies football to play Camogie and get girls who play Camogie to play ladies football. And I would be a very, very firm believer in the value, particularly at young ages and at club level, in playing both sports. I've seen hundreds, no more than yourself, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of games over the years. And any time you watch a game where there's dual players, the dual players are better Camogie players by virtue of them playing and training for ladies football, and the dual players who are playing ladies football are better by virtue of them playing Camogie. There is no threat to this if we do it properly. And if we're working together, operating as two separate associations, you have the increased clashes and you have increased issues with regard to training problems. If we look at it from an integrated mindset, if we were both in the same association, what would we do? We'd support each other. I made the point as well, just to finish on that one, around the fact that we regularly make the point when we are looking for support and looking for funding about the importance of supporting female participation in sport and how important it is that we support female participation in sport and that we get funding to help us to support female participation in sport. But how many of us actually go down and support females participating in an LGFA game? And we don't do it. We don't support each other anywhere near as much as we should do, Martin. And I think it's very important that, you know, that starts to happen much more than it is at the moment. It happens in certain areas where there's a strong dual setup and the girls will play both codes. And of course, if your girls are playing both codes, which is a knock-on advantage, well, people might be nervous about starting up an LGFA setup in their Camogie club. But the reality is, if the girls are playing both codes, by definition, of course, you're going to support both games because they're your girls. So you're going to support both automatically. But I'd like to see more of that. I'd like to see more social Camogie. It's a concept we have just put in place a new membership class, if you like, of social player, and there are some issues around it. We've got to get our heads around it. But the idea that girls want to play Camogie for just fun, just for the fun of it, and we're great at doing that at underage within a club environment, but we're not as good when you get into the adult ranks. You tend to have to play in the league or the championship. Whereas lots of people play other sports just for the fun of it. And we don't provide as many opportunities for people to do that. And I think we need to get better at it so that we can maintain an opportunity for people who don't want to be or possibly have gone past the stage where they're playing senior club or senior inter-county, but they still want to hit a ball. They still want an opportunity to be able to play.
Yeah.
The other piece, and I mentioned it around non-traditional teams. So teams in organisations. When I was working in Dublin back in the 80s and 90s, the Business House Leagues and the Dublin Insurance Athletic Society were really strong, and they had Gaelic football teams, and they had soccer teams, and they had all sorts of different sporting associations and teams for them. There's sports and social clubs all across large organisations in Ireland, and we have a huge number of big companies that have sports and social setups. But we don't have a Camogie option for them within those. And getting people to have greater access to social Camogie will be hugely beneficial because it will bring people who otherwise haven't had a background in it to our game, which will also bring their kids to our games, and it will bring them and their kids to our clubs, which is where we want to go ultimately.
Yeah, exactly. I suppose I'm just going to bring you back to the LGFA point there that you made a few minutes ago, because obviously Helen O'Rourke, the CEO of the LGFA, was at Congress as well. And during her little bit of a speech, she did say that the perception may be out there in the public that the Camogie Association and the LGFA do not talk to one another and they don't sit down or they don't look at fixtures. But that's not the case at all. Like, there is a very good working relationship between the two associations.
Yeah. Yeah, and I referenced it in my own speech as well, and I know Hilda has made similar comments before, and it was great to have Helen with us, and it was great to have Jarlath with us as well, and great to have Tom Parsons with us as well. So it was great to have the three, those three individuals with us. But on Helen's piece, it's remarkable the extent to which sometimes the media misrepresents the situation. The reality is we do engage fully between the two associations, and indeed with the GAA at the start of the season when we're looking at fixtures. But things happen during the year, whether it be because of a fixture being called off and having to be refixed, or because a sponsor or a media sponsor needs to change the day in which it can broadcast a fixture, and fixtures get moved around. It is generally for those kinds of reasons and nothing else that fixtures get moved around, and then you have a clash. The number of clashes is very, very small. I think the extent to which we have a very strong relationship with the LGFA at headquarters level, at the national level, is misrepresented. We get on really, really well. We engage really, really well. We work really, really well. Both sides make compromises. Both sides do what they can to meet the other side halfway through. The issue tends to be more on, on the club and inter-county setup, where when club competitions are being fixed, there isn't the same level of engagement in every county. In some counties, like is always the case, in some counties they're brilliant at it, in other counties they're not necessarily as brilliant at it. And that again is where that integrated mindset now piece comes into play. Well, if we were working as part of the same organisation, would we actually be sitting down and going through fixtures with a lot more detail? Absolutely. Of course we would. At county level, when we're setting our club fixtures, absolutely. We do it at a national level. We're not as good at the county and provincial level. And it's an area that's, you know, with a relatively small amount of creative thinking, it could resolve a lot of problems. But I gave the example of Galway GAA. And Galway GAA, obviously Galway is one of those counties where there's a strong hurling and a strong Gaelic football team. And therefore, when they come to running their club competitions, they have a lot of clubs and a lot of competitions to run and a lot of very, very serious players on both codes. And they operate a weekend on, weekend off model. And it seems to work reasonably well. Now, I'm not saying that will solve the problem for every county, but there's definitely ways in which we could make sure that it was easier for girls to play both codes and enjoy playing both codes. And we need to be careful to make sure that they're getting the opportunity, because I think, you know, I'm a firm believer in the importance of culture and importance of Irish culture. And when we have kids in primary schools and in secondary schools and then going into university and then young adults working, and when they're young kids, we make sure they're exposed to Irish culture, we make sure they're exposed to Irish language. Some people give out about how we do that, but they are exposed to Irish language and people get the opportunity to be exposed and to be taught about Irish culture. And I very much take the view that sporting culture is just as important. And every girl in every primary school, no matter where, no matter what county, no matter what town, no matter what village, every girl in every primary school should be given the opportunity to kick a football and to lift a hurl and strike a slither. And I believe it would be hugely beneficial to both games if we were able to operate to that model, which we're not there at the moment, but we need to get better at it. And in some urban areas, it's difficult because they don't have the space. I accept that completely. And there's no magic wand that's going to produce those additional facilities for those areas. But where possible, there's lots of areas where girls get an opportunity to play one sport but not the other.
I suppose during your inauguration speech as well, and you've touched on some of those issues that's there as well, but you did focus on the three Fs, I suppose, the facilities, the finance and the fixtures. Do you feel that they're the three major, they're not kind of stumbling blocks, but the three areas that all of the associations are kind of looking at getting tight and putting together so that it can, I suppose, have a smoother transition for the associations to come together as the one unit?
Yeah, so there's a lot of talk on them. And the reason I picked up on that is there was starting to become a narrative that because of these three issues, which were, you know, kind of neatly wrapped as the three Fs, the facilities, the fixtures and the finances, that means that integration is difficult. That means that integration is going to take time. That means that we can't do the integration. And I don't buy that. And the point I was making was absolutely, absolutely, fixtures, finances and facilities are challenges for the three associations and will be significant challenges for the combined association. But they won't be a significant challenge for the combined association by virtue of our integrating. They're a challenge because we have to get better facilities around the country. Tom Ryan made the point that we need to start looking at more municipal-type centres of excellence in more locations, which will be open to a wider range of sports, but would attract more government funding because of the fact that they're available to a wider range of sports, as distinct from each club of each code trying to build and own and manage and just use for themselves their own facilities. And I agree with Tom on that. And I think that's the approach that's going to have to be adopted. But that's an approach that will be more successfully adopted by the combined association, including Lady Football and Camogie, much more easily, in fact, than by the three separate associations. So in actual fact, I would see that we are better positioned to tackle the three Fs if we accelerate the integration, as distinct from we should use the three Fs as a means to decelerate the integration.
Brian, I suppose it was a rules congress as well. So for most of our listeners that would know, a rules congress can only take place every 3 years. And that's a chance for people to change the playing rules or change a couple of rules within the game itself. And I suppose there was a few in it. The most notable ones, I suppose, now. Now, these don't come in, I don't think, until 2025, if I stand corrected on that. But obviously, there's going to be 8 substitutions in all competitions. There is now age grades because of the playing time presentation that Linda Kenny and her group presented to Congress as well, which I found some of that data very, very stark and even frightening. That's, you know, the way some of the players are being treated, and I don't mean badly, but just bringing up players like minors or under 16s up to play adults, and they're being left on the bench and they're not getting game time. A lot of interesting rules did pass, but the playing time really did hit home, I think, with an awful lot of the delegates.
Yeah, the playing time rules changes are hugely positive and have the potential to be transformational, to be honest with you. They probably haven't got as much coverage in the media since Congress than they probably merit. I know, and I'm sure you're aware, we at Ord Cóirle have been trying to get changes made in this area for some time. There's two sides to it. As you rightly say, there's the narrowing of the age bands for inter-county. It doesn't impact on club, but for inter-county. And the reason it doesn't impact on club, by the way, is because we recognise the fact that there are loads of small clubs that would really struggle if we narrow the age bands too much for them. But for inter-county teams, we have brought in a narrowing. So if you're playing minor, that means you're over 16 and under 18. You cannot play up from under 16. If you're playing under 16, you're over 14. And under 16, you cannot play up from under 12. And if you're playing adult, you have to be out of minor. You have to be over 18. And that finally breaks us away from a model where we had technically children, 17 years of age, are children, playing in adult competition. So I'm delighted that those rule changes have gone through. We are cognizant of the fact for the what would be terms of tier 3 counties who have lower numbers playing will struggle, particularly with the one around minors playing adults and in some cases the 16s playing minor. But as you said, Linda's data showed very clearly that in actual fact was there are reasonably large numbers being called up and minuscule number are actually played. So they're being taken out of and brought to training for an adult team, but they're not actually getting played for it. And that just contributes to the negativity because they spend their time sitting on a bench, which doesn't help anybody. And there's lots of various different things, particularly in the media at the moment, about areas that have a tendency to contribute towards people giving up our game. But the reality is we have stark data that shows leaving girls sitting on the bench, not giving girls adequate playing time, is a massive contributor to girls walking away from the game. We have tried to be cognizant of the issue for the Tier 3 counties. So whilst in the tier 1 counties, those changes with regard to the age bans will come in 2025. The tier 2s are pushed out by a year and the tier 3 actually pushed out by another year to 2027. The subs rules come in across the board in 2025. And that's brilliant as well, in that you have unlimited subs coming in for underage and club now. So there's no reason for girls to be sitting on the bench when they're playing club games at under you know, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, you know, the whole way up to under 18. And that's a huge change, an absolutely huge change. And it's the potential to give lots more girls game time, which will keep them more interested in our sport. So I'm really delighted that those playing rules were passed. And what was great about that, Martin, was the fact that it was evidence-based. It wasn't just an opinion being put forward to the delegates. We had done the data. We had actually gone through the process to make sure that we had the data to back up what we were recommending. And I think that really helped and is instructive for us going forward to make sure that we have solid data to make the recommendations and put that in front of delegates. And when you do, you saw it yourself, when you do, the delegates get behind it straight away when they can see just how stark the situation is.
I suppose this also helps as well with an administrative point of view, both for you nationally and for counties themselves when it now comes to fixtures, because you're no longer waiting for a fixture to be held up because some teams have under-16s playing on minor, or there's minor teams now propping up the junior or intermediate or senior teams as well. So this is obviously going to help with the split season that so many people are giving out about. It will allow certain amount of games to be played at the same time, subject obviously to facilities and match officials and that being available. But I can see this as being a real positive.
Yeah, I think from a club point of view, it's going to really help. It really is going to help. Obviously, it'll be next year before it comes into effect for us. But I think whilst historically people maybe weren't 100% sure of whether the logic, you know, hung together, but when we have inter-county age bands operating properly, it will have an impact then in terms of the ability for club competitions to be run, because you know that there won't be girls in that club competition being called up to play in a county team.
Brian, I suppose the other big major talking point out of Congress as well, and it's been all over social media as well with people commenting, I suppose, on a process that they don't realise or know exactly what does happen at Congress, and that was obviously the Scots rule, and this is a contentious one that nearly comes up every 3 years when it is a rules change as well. But I mean, the Scots rule was changed. It was brought forward by Britain and a couple of other counties. Theirs was to have a choice of Scots or shorts, but obviously everyone has to be uniform or uniformly attired on the same day. But there is a process there, and obviously counties themselves had the data done, i.e. Going out to their development squads, surveying the clubs, surveying the players to see whether that's done. And then it comes back and the delegates themselves are voting with what happens within the county. So to hear people giving out that the Camogie Association is back in the olden age and they're not moving with the times, the grow is actually there with the majority of people to keep the Scots in place.
Yeah, absolutely. That was the decision and the decision making process. You're well aware and well used to it. The decision making process within the Camogie Association is extremely democratic. I think that Hilda made the point when people give out about Croke Park. Croke Park is a stadium. It's made out of concrete and steel and other materials. The Camogie Association is the people. Croke Park doesn't make decisions. The Camogie Association, its people, its delegates, representing all of the units around the country and indeed around the globe, including the schools, have an opportunity to have their voice heard at Congress. And one of the things, and it was interesting, I've been talking to a few of the people who attended, non-members of the association, and they were struck by the extent to which the debate was held in a very respectful way, and everybody was given the opportunity to talk. They did talk, and those who were in favour of the various motions put forward their reasons and their rationale, and they were very passionate about it. But they were very respectful then and listened to people from other counties who said, well, they had done their research and this was the information that they had been given, and they then were mandated by their counties to vote on that basis. It isn't a group of individuals in an ivory tower sitting there and deciding that they're not going to listen to the voices that are coming from the units. These are the delegates representing the units. It's the delegates that make the decision. And the delegates made the decision. And I absolutely 100% accept the bona fides of those who were disappointed and who wanted a different decision. But we have to be bound by the democratic decision of our association. And the same as any other rules. Some rules were brought forward and weren't put through. And I know Liam O'Neill would have loved to have seen the sideline from the hand rule go through, and it didn't go through. So there are rules in all sorts of areas that go through or don't go through. And at the end of the day, we use an extremely democratic process, and we need to make sure that we respect that democratic process. Now, that said, I have no problem, as John saying, I will continue to engage with the units and with the GPA, and we will continue to work on this issue and see if there are ways that we can bring it forward, maybe talk to manufacturers and have a look at design and those sort of things. But the reality is, the proposals came forward, they were discussed in detail without any interruption, without anybody talking across anybody, in a very respectful manner. And then the vote was taken by the delegates, and the delegates decided they didn't want to make the change. And that's the process, and we respect that process.
I suppose, looking at it from our point of view here on a podcast in a radio station that is part of local media and national media as well, is it disappointing for you then over what was a historic weekend, the 120-year anniversary being celebrated, the first male, and even leave you aside out of it for the minute, has been the first male, but people giving out about things and the media themselves are not there to actually expel what's been done in the democratic process and what counties are actually being done. Is that disappointment to see that there wasn't more national coverage being done for the Camogie Congress this year?
Look, at the end of the day, you can never control what's going to be in the media at any point in time. The reality is there's no point in being disappointed. All we can do is communicate as best we can. And for me, the most important audience, to be honest with you, is our own delegates and units, to make sure that they understand and that the communication is going back to them, so that they know how Congress works and how the democratic process works and how the decisions were made. Yeah, absolutely. There's always a bit of you that looks at it. Not actually about me, to be honest with you. I'm not that concerned about it from my perspective. Yes, the history from a historic position of the 120th anniversary, the first time a male was put in. But I was actually probably a little bit more disappointed on the fact that the playing rules changes, because they're so important with regard to giving girls meaningful playing time. And a huge amount of work had been put into that report and that presentation by Linda Kenny, the former Leinster chair. And she did great work. And we got it across the board. We got it across the line. We engaged with the members, and it really showed how data-driven decision-making works. And to the betterment of our association. And to be honest, that wasn't really picked up at all, you know. My local media, where I grew up in Longford, they were very strong. The Longford Leader had good coverage of me, and Galway had good coverage of me. So I got plenty of coverage. I wasn't worried about that. But I would have loved to see a little bit more coverage of the playing rules changes, to be honest. But yeah, like, I'm not overly disappointed, to be honest. Like, you can't control what stories the media will run. The media will run at any point in time. All you can do is try and have a good relationship with individual members of the media, and make sure that you communicate your story as best you can. And that's what we'll continue to do. Like, we have our league finals, like, things move on. There's a line I can never quite remember, but it's got to do with yesterday's news is today's fish and chip wrapper. The reality of the situation is we move on now, and we have the very national league finals over the weekend, three finals on Saturday and two on Sunday. And if I might use the opportunity to flag particularly the ones on Sunday, not to take from the three on Saturday, but we have a really historic event happening on Sunday, and it's kind of gone under the radar, in that the very Division 2A and 1A National League finals will be played alongside the Leinster football quarterfinal in Croke Park. I think it's the first time ever that a Leinster football quarterfinal has gone on to the same event, overall event, as two National League finals in Camogie. And we're strongly urging everybody to go. This is a real historic piece. This is what integration could look like in the future, where we have games of different codes on at the same time. I think it's a really exciting day for us on Sunday. I'm hoping that Dublin Camogie and Meath Camogie fans and supporters will all come in, watch the Camogie finals, and then stay on and watch Dublin and Meath in the football. I'm hoping that the Dublin football and Meath football fans will say, do you know what, this is an opportunity to go in and have a look and see what a top-level Camogie match looks like, and come in and watch our finals, and then stay on and support the Dubs or Meath in the quarterfinals. But it's a really interesting opportunity, and I'm hoping that the media do pick up on this, because it's a very unique event on Sunday in our 120th anniversary that we're having a combination of the very Camogie League finals alongside the Leinster football championship quarterfinal.
It certainly is great to see MSF and Anya. We'll be previewing those league finals a little while, shortly, in a matter of fact. And you're more than welcome to join us if you want to get involved in the conversation there, Brian.
I'm going to have to say an unfortunate no, because I have actually got another meeting to go to now, but I do appreciate the opportunity, and I will come on and talk to you again some other time, no doubt. I'd be very happy to do so in the future, because I'm very interested. I love Camogie, and I know you heard me saying it in Congress. It's something I get passionate about, and I love talking about it, and I love watching it, and I love seeing it thrive. So I'm looking forward to talking to you again.
Well, actually, you gave me a different answer than what I was expecting, because I thought the neutrality part was going to come out and say that you couldn't comment on either one, that you wanted both of them to do very, very well. So
I think the risk would be that I might betray the fact that I'm looking for Galway to win, but I can't possibly say that on the radio.
Well, we won't mind anyway. As I always said, and as Hilda keeps telling me, I can no longer be a Kilkenny man, but a leopard can't change its stripes no matter how much that you try. Brian Malloy, thank you so much. Well done on your appointment as the president. We do look forward to it. Hopefully it won't be the first time that we have you on. I know we went on a little bit longer than we were supposed to, but you were flying away at it and giving all your points across. So we wanted to give as much time to that as possible. So thank you very much for joining us on Come On Kind, and the very best of luck with your Camogie presidency.
Thanks a million. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
That was Brian Malloy there, of course, the new president of the Camogie Association, and I have to say, really enjoyed that interview with him. But we're going to move on. Brian mightn't want to get into the national leagues, but myself and Anya certainly will, because we want to know what's going to happen. There is games down for decision, and I'm going to take them as they appear in front of me on my screen here. Anya, the Division 1B final, as we said, not last week, but the week before, Dublin and Wexford is in it. It's going to be played in SETU in Carlow on Saturday at 2 o'clock. And this is a Leinster derby, so I'm not going to comment on it, because I would like to see both teams winning it. Obviously somebody is going to, but you're going to tell me, who is that team going to be?
Do you know what? I think the strides that, you know, both teams have obviously had a really, really good league campaign, and I think it's also going to do both teams the world of good, you know, getting more competitive games under the belt when they hit the ground running there for championship. My opinion, I do think you have to seriously fancy Wexford in this. I just think that, you know, they had a great campaign last year as well. But I do think there's a different edge about them. And I do think they're going to have, I've said it already, I do think they are going to have some sort of a say when it comes to the All-Ireland campaign as well. I think they're building a mixture between youth and experience there at the moment. And I think Wexford has certainly come along like really, really strong over the last couple of years, and I would expect them to come out of this division. And I think if they do come out of this division, I think this is where we're going to see them kind of, you know, I suppose, impose themselves back in as one of the top teams at senior level in Camogie.
I suppose for a National League point of view, it's great to see Dublin there. They were obviously in a relegation final a couple of years ago against Waterford. That Waterford lost out on. Waterford is now after getting promoted. Wexford has been there against Waterford in that final that they got promoted. So they have the experience being there. Dublin hasn't been in a league final in a while. So it's great to see both teams coming back up. And actually, it would be nice to see both of them up at the top of the table in the Division 1A competing and seeing where they can go. But either way, this is going to be an intriguing battle and one that I know of the crowd will love to see. And obviously for Kilkenny people, you know, it's only up the road. You'll see a fantastic game of Camogie between two excellent Wexford Leinster teams even. And I know we're going to all look forward to it. The Division 4 final is between Tyrone and Wicklow. This is going to take place in Protection and Prosperity Louth GAA Training Centre in Darver in County Louth, and I know that we don't see too much of them, but obviously I am a Leinster man. Wicklow is a Leinster team. Sorry, Tyrone, but
you know, best of luck to Bree the Donnelly and all the crew there in Wicklow, to yourselves, and hopefully that you can come away out of that with a victory. And the other final then is the Division 3A final, which is going to take place in Abbottstown. This is Armagh and Laois. Armagh two in a row, I think it might even be three in a row that they're in the league final, but Laois is there after winning all their games, another Leinster team. But Áine, we have seen a bit of Laois because you've come up against them as well when you were managing the intermediate team with Kilkenny. Nice to see them in a league final again, because they're doing great work here, and it would be great to see them getting promoted up to 2A.
Yeah, it would, absolutely. And I suppose, like, they have put in an awful lot of work over the course of the last 12 months, you know, but they are coming up against a really strong Armagh team who probably, and I think it, like, I don't think anybody would come at you, I suppose, if you said, like, they're probably a team that should, that probably should be really up at intermediate level at this stage, and probably should be playing at a higher division. I do think there's a really strong cohort there in Armagh, so I would be expecting Armagh to come out with a victory in that one.
Okay.
I would. Like, I'd love to see Laois winning. I really, really would. But if you'd put my neck on the line there, I'm going to go with Armagh by the skin of their teeth.
Okay, well, I have friends in Armagh, and I'm not going to say anything because Rosie is going to maybe being on Ord Corla as well, and I don't fancy getting a slap offer. So I'm not going to pick a winner in this one, but best luck to both teams in it. The Minor A Championship continues on Sunday, as we said. Antrim and Galway, that is a huge game. No venue on that yet. I'm going to skip that fixture for a minute. The Minor C game is obviously going to be Wicklow and Mayo. That's at 2 o'clock in Abbottstown in the GAA Centre of Excellence. Minor C round, these are round 5 of the Minor C Championship, so last round matches. Tyrone versus Donegal in Park Kilcogue. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. That has a 2 o'clock throw-in. Waterford and Tipperary to be confirmed with a venue, but it has a 2 o'clock throw-in. And as we said, a vitally important game there, because if Waterford can get that victory, it will knock Galway out of the All-Ireland knockout competition. And Cork and Kilkenny then in the Cork Camogie grounds. That's taking place at 2 o'clock. I did ask you for your prediction on that one already, did I?
Well, I'd be going for Kilkenny anyway.
I can't remember, but no, it's going to be a great one. Yeah. I did actually, because we said there might be a little bit of shadow boxing going on in that game. But obviously, the two games that is going to take place in Croke Park at the weekend is the Division 2A League Final, which sees Derry and Westmeath come up against one another. Now, we know what happened the last day. Derry won it, or Westmeath won it 5-9 to 1-9. That's not going to be the case, I don't think, at the weekend. Another Leinster team in it. But you fancied Derry nearly all throughout the league to come out of that group. Is that your prediction?
Yeah, I'm still sticking with Derry on this one. I think, you know, after winning the Intermediate All-Ireland and I suppose playing Division 2A, this is probably, this, they're trying to get as many competitive games, like all the teams, in under the belt. They're stepping up to the senior ranks when it comes to the Championship. And I think, you know, they, if they can get a win from this, I think that'll bring them on leaps and bounds, and I think it'll give them a serious confidence boost, getting silverware early in the year, heading into a senior championship. I do fancy Derry in this one big time.
Okay, and then Cahal McAllister is the man in the middle for that one. He's a Cork man. Best of luck to Cahal and his team of officials there. We obviously had him in Nolan Park the last day that we were there playing a game. It was Nolan Park, was it? No, it wasn't actually. It was in Waterford in the SETU arena that he was doing the senior game. So an experienced official. And obviously the big one of the weekend before the football match is Galway versus Tipperary. Tipperary are in the final. This was supposed to be the final in 2020 before COVID destroyed that game for us. And I'm so looking forward to this one on Sunday. But Áine, can Tipperary break the duck? Can they come out with victory? Or can Galway put another league title under their belt?
Do you know what? I suppose it's probably a pairing that if you were to say somebody, to say to somebody at the start of the year, you would have probably said that Galway would, you know, more than likely be in it, but I honestly think Tipperary are just a different outfit this year, and I suppose we've seen it last year as well. They're after bringing in some really, really good players, as have Galway too, but I think there's something different about Tipperary. There's a lot of younger girls, I suppose, coming into the fore there, and they're standing up, like, you know, some really good performances. You know, Karen Kennedy, you know, moving up to the forward, she's producing the good, she's getting scores at vital times. Then you have the likes of Roisin Howard there as well in at centre forward. hour or two or roaming around the half hour line, really, really good. You've got Eamon McGrath there as well, Clodagh McIntyre. I really, really fancy Tipperary to win this. I do. And I think, you know, I suppose competing in Croke Park last year was a big, I suppose it was, there was fierce excitement around that time. But like, I think now that they have the monkey off the back about, you know, playing in Croke Park, and this is going to be such a massive addition to them, I really think that they're going to go out all guns blazing. I think this could be the make or break of Tipperary, this league final here. Listen,
I was just going to ask that. Who would it be more beneficial to? Who needs to win this
Tipperary
one more?
Needs to win this more, definitely, without a doubt. I think Galway are going to be there when it comes championship time anyway. But I think, you know, for momentum, for confidence, you know, and I suppose for something different as well, and for the actual whole game of Camogie, it would be really good to see Tipperary getting in there. Like, listen, it's Galway or Galway, they're going to come out. They've got serious players as well. You know, you've got the two McGrath sisters are going to be lining out for them, Ailish O'Reilly, Niamh McPeak, Carrie Dolan, you know, Dervla Higgins. You've got, you know, yet Niamh Mallon just coming down from down. Don't think she's seen too much game time at the league at the moment. But, you know, still, they've got a lot of big names to show as well. But I think I would love to see Tipperary win it. I think it would be really, really good for Camogie in general throughout the country. And I think, obviously, especially in Tipperary, it'd be absolutely brilliant for them. And I suppose, like, a lot of these Tip girls, they probably feel like, you know, when they got to the league final a couple of years ago and it obviously wasn't played, there was a lot of maybe resentment and hurt towards that as well, that they didn't get their opportunity there and then to play in a final. And this is their opportunity, and why not on the stage that it is? It's Croke Park, and they'll be looking to, like, you know, double their chances of getting back to Croke Park again this year as well. And I do think there's certainly a team that are going in the right direction.
Well, come here. We heard our Oakthorne on there earlier on. It is a doubleheader of league finals in Croke Park at 12:30. The Division 2A game between Derry and Westmeath. And at 2:30, you have the meeting of Galway and Tipperary in a Division 1 final. And then later on, if you enjoyed a bit of football, you have the old rivalry of Dublin versus Meath in a Leinster Championship game. Where else would you get it? I think the last time I was at a hurling game was actually Kilkenny was playing someone that Laois played a game in it, but I don't ever remember being at a Camogie game that there was a football game with it either. So a little bit of its own history, I think, there. A bit of novelty. But either way, as Brian said, we need to all support one another.
There was a couple of years ago, wasn't
was there?
Yeah, I think Kilkenny seniors, we played in Croke Park against Dublin, I think, in the league.
Sorry, you're right, but it was the spring series.
Yes.
That
was two big teams.
Correct.
Was Dublin and Kerry playing?
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the spring series. Yeah. We played at the night time because we were the curtain raiser
yes.
to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a home game for Dublin. Well, yeah. To be fair, I wouldn't really call Croke Park a home game for Dublin Camogie now, to be fair.
No, but it was a big thing,
but
I suppose, for Dublin Camogie to get into
yeah.
Croke Park, wasn't it? Yeah,
yeah, it certainly
really
was. But yeah, no, it's great to see that. And we would like to see more of it. Anya, I know you're rushing away because you have training, but very briefly, Congress, some new rules for you. 8 subs in all competitions at inter-county level, including senior coming in 2025. Unlimited substitutions at club level. Good move.
I can see, like, you know,
was me thinking she was going to say, yeah, great move. And
I think for underage, yeah, I think it is a really, really good move. I don't know, it's going to be very interesting how it's going to play out. I know that there was a discussion about this and it was basically said, but sure, you don't have to use them if you don't want to use them. I suppose, like, you know, if you have a game that's, you know, very tight and you're after, you know, one team only has 4 subs and the other team has 24 subs, you know, the fresh legs going in, that's going to be
huge. It can help, all right.
It can, it does help. But listen, it is what it is. The rules brought in.
Flip it around another way.
Yeah.
Right? You're after using your 5 subs in an All-Ireland semi-final.
Yeah.
Somebody gets injured and you have players sitting on the bench and you're like, well, she can't play on. We have to go down to 14 players. Mm. I'd rather be able to bring on somebody
yeah,
at the 100%. End of the day. But
yeah, no, I do get it. Listen, there's obviously pros and cons to
we'll
it.
We'll have to wait and see.
It's not, I don't hate it. I don't love it. So, yeah. You know, we'll have to see how it goes.
Concussion rule is obviously brought in.
Yeah, I think that's important.
A big one.
Yeah.
I know there was a lot of discussion around referees and the onus being put on them. And I suppose how would I put this, Lil? What's the word that I'm looking for? The you know, not it's make letting the referee make that decision.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of a word. It won't come to me. Anyway, Scorts, as we know, was 44 or 45 against. 45 for 55 against was the official one. Possession rule is now gone. Well, will be going in line the same as the GAA. So that is was a little bit confusing at times. So if your own player went down and your own player was injured, well, then obviously it was a throw ball. Hand pass has been defined more now. It has to be a clear striking action. During the National League, a bit of confusion as well. It was supposed to be an indirect free. Some frees were given. They scored. They got points and all that to it. Shoulder to shoulder is in.
Mm-hmm.
However, you can't deliberately shoulder somebody still. So you can't decide you're lining up Lillian Houlihan going for that ball and you're going to drive her up into row Z before you get to the ball. It still has to be in the process of doing it. But I think it's going to make it better. It's going to bring a bit more contact into
it. It's going to make it clearer.
Wow,
as well.
You're loud. Sorry.
I usually am. I think some of the rules that were cleaned up, basically, and they'll be clearer to everybody because there was a lot of confusion over some of the rules.
Yeah, yeah. No.
In fairness, Liam O'Neill and his group, I know I said it last week, who was doing these rules and whether they were talking to grass level roots people and the whole lot, but actually the people he had on the committee were actually former All-Ireland people and the whole lot. So,
and he explained them very well as well.
And I liked what he thought, that he was thinking that these rules is for a thinking player.
Yes.
So players that's thinking ahead and wanting to do things quickly, like the sideline puck. I know he was a little bit peeved that it didn't go through, or a bit disappointed even. That didn't. But the majority of them did, including the rules. Obviously, a sideline puck now, if you're too close to it, that is defined and it will be a free. Slow puck outs, this is a bugbear of mine. The goalkeeper, and they're well ahead, and you know, they're trying to slow things down, they're moving at the back of the goal and they're coming out around it. Now in GAA it will be a throw ball, referee will blow the whistle, and Camogie, you're giving away a 45 directly in the centre of the goal.
Yeah, well, do you know, we have seen umpteen occasions goalies trying to slow down. It's just a bit of cuteness,
taking
to be
the
fair. And they have,
out.
And but to be fair, they've been taught, a goalkeeper's been taught that
and
from a very young age.
There was no punishment apart from the referee adding on a bit of time to it. But
or
anyway.
Martin pulling his hair out.
Yeah. Quick puck out now from a score or a wide ball. God help us all referees in this one, because by the time you try and get the score down, you won't be able to see what's going on.
And there was a few queries on that as well, as to how were the referees going to be able to manage that
well,
they would have to write down.
Have to try
and whatever.
But anyway, it passed. It failed.
It failed.
Mm. Sorry, the quick poke out failed.
Yeah, it's gone.
Because it was 53-47. I'm trying to read Lillian's writing here. But no, that actually failed.
Me.
So thank God. That's gone.
And that was why it failed, because they were looking at the referees
need somebody or a sideline official or something
you,
there.
You
to
would
try
want
and do
a
it.
Second referee. You'd specifically
actually
need to have a referee just, yeah, I suppose, doing the clock and doing the scores.
No, I know when we're at matches and you obviously have your own umpires and that, you get somebody to take the score and the time. But even so, like, things are going so quick, by the time you try and wave a flag and write down the score, there could be another score coming back in on top of you. But anyway, no, that did fail. I'm looking at it for 53% for. 47% against, which obviously it did mean that it did fail because it needed a 2/3 majority. Rules 25, 26, 27 and 28, all new rules brought in, that is in relation to the age groups, coming out of the Meaningful Playing Time report. It is online. I have to say I read through it. Linda Kenny and her team done a brilliant job with that. Very interesting data. And I know I was onto
her. Data.
It is a little bit, but interesting as well to see what's going on. And as Brian said, it's nice to see that the data is there, that they're not just plucking numbers out of the sky like some reports, not in Camogie. I'm not saying Camogie reports are pulled out of the sky, but there is definitely other ones around that the data is not there to show it up. This is Meaningful Playing Time with data that is there by the players and by the Camogie Association.
And Linda and her committee put a lot of time and effort and work into it. It was very well put together.
But that's inter-county. That's not club.
No, well,
it's both, because it's both. The new rules is changing is to help out the club players as well. Because obviously you're going to have unlimited substitution. So now you no longer have...
No, as in, sorry, that age rule.
The age rule is inter-county, and there's certain ones there for club, I think, as well. There's two lots of rules. We would have to check rule 25 to 28. I would check it out. I think the inter-county one... is definitely for the under 18s. But anyway, herself is going checking it out there. Obviously, a big thing as well, technology is brilliant, so transfers are all gone online.
Mm-hmm.
Which is great. No longer the paper trail and trying to do things in a mad hurry, etc. So some of the rules, yes, great, speed things up a little bit. Some of the rules, debating things with the Scorch and the whole lot. You were listening to Brian on the Scorch rule, and I know you, they're a bugbearer of yours. So
it's
come
not,
on.
It's not that they're a bugbearer of mine, right? Okay, I get it. But like, I think, okay, I suppose I can only talk for myself personally. Like, comfort-wise, I'd be more inclined to wear a pair of shorts. And I know you're saying that a lot of the you know, the bigger counties did do a survey with the players.
Even some of the smaller counties.
Yeah, like, I get that. Still, to me, like, the voting was quite tight. I think every county should have done it. I do honestly think the results will be different.
Surprisingly, I talked to some of the delegates afterwards and talked to some hierarchy, you know, officers in other counties that I know who weren't there.
Mm.
And they'd all done their due diligence on it, and they'd checked with all of their clubs and their teams and whatever to see what the general consensus was. And while they wanted to train in shorts, they wanted to play in skirts. And the only downside to it was maybe the design of them, that maybe could they be designed a little bit better, that the newer ones, while they were grand, were probably a little bit short. But other than that, they wanted to continue playing in Scotland. And I was surprised. Most of the officers that I spoke to were surprised as well.
Yeah. No, I am surprised. To be honest with you, I am surprised with that rule. I am surprised. But as you said, like, the counties, a lot of the counties did do surveys with their players. Yeah. That's fair enough. As long as it's the players getting a say.
Yeah.
That's the way I would be looking at that.
There's a lot of people
thing.
Giving out, it had to be men that was there doing the voting on it. If anyone went to Congress, I'll tell you one thing, you really don't know, because the majority of delegates that go to it is actually female.
I'd say if there was 12 ladies, men in the room of 120 or 30 people, it was the size of it.
So rule 28.4.1 is actually in relation to the club competitions.
So
to be under 12, you have to be over 12, and over 9. 14 is be under 14 and over 10. Under 16 be under 16 over 12. Under 18 be over under 18 and over 14. In adults, you have to be over 15. They have redefined it as over means a player must be over the age limit by midnight on the 31st of December of the year prior to the championship. Example, to play an under 14 player, they must be 10 years of age on the 31st of December prior to the championship year. And the other ones then in rule 28.4.2, 28.4.3 and 28.4.4, all in relation to the intercounty, which means that under 14 now can't play under 16, and vice versa.
I don't think we never, like, I suppose in Kilkenny,
we haven't done that for a long lot of years.
But that
was deliberately done because we have enough girls to field teams without bringing up the juvenile players. And to be fair,
it's about letting them develop.
It's letting them develop.
It's another step up from club, like, so.
Yeah, well, we've been lucky enough in that. It has been a busy weekend. It's going to be a busy night for Anya, because not only is she doing this, she's going training very soon. And good luck with that.
So she's camogie. She's coming back.
No.
She's coming back refereeing. Definitely.
I'm telling you, we'll
have a refereeing shortly. But anyway, that is about it from ourselves here in the KCLR studios. It's been a busy week, as we said. It's been a long week, but the democratic process is there and everybody has engaged with it at Congress. The rules will no longer be changed now for the next 3 years. So whatever is there, they will come into effect in 2025, but the rules, Congress will change them again if necessary in 2027. Integration is fixed for 2027. I've officially taken up my role now, along with Ort Corla as well, and I'm looking forward to a busy weekend. But from us all here in the studios in KCLR, if only this rain would go away and we could get the pitches dried up, we'd be back out and we would be belting balls away, which hopefully we will be doing for the next couple of months. But for the time being, we are almost finished on Season 6, Onion, starting into the club championships.
Season
6 goes to intercounty. Sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself.
Slow down there, will you?
I told you it's a busy weekend.
He's waterlogged.
We will be continuing into the Leinster Championship, which is what I meant to say, which is starting on the 4th of May and running right through to the 18th of May. But from us all here in the KCLR studios, enjoy your week. Hopefully it's going to be a bit drier, and we'll chat to you again next week. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
She's riding it. She's taking it. Goal for KCLR. It's in the net.
international physicality rise, and you know they're going with the every ball there.
Outstanding game, you might play so far. This pays off.
The day in the office there, you know she popped up at a point, a very much needed point, where Kilkenny really needed it.
This is Come On Kind with Martin Quilty and Anya Fahey.